Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. If you have allergies, bad odors, or damp smells, you need the Thunderstorm. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code Howie10 to save $10 plus free shipping. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me on this beautiful Friday in New England. I'm at the 110 Grill in Woburn doing a live remote with a packed house. I encourage everyone to head on down here, get a free book, get a delicious meal. You'll have so much fun. Now, today is June 18th. Tomorrow is June 19th, or Juneteenth. It's officially a federal holiday in the United States, celebrating the emancipation of African Americans who had been enslaved. It's getting a lot of... there's a lot of discussion happening on social media and politically just about this day. And my next guest is going to talk to us about the importance of this day and tomorrow and what it means to him. Paris Denard, he's the national spokesperson and director of Black Media Affairs, and he works for the GOP. Paris, I'm a huge fan of yours. Thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Thanks for having me.
Paris, let's talk a little bit about this day. I came across your Twitter, and you gave your Paris perspective on what this day means and why it's so important to American history.
Well, look, Juneteenth is an important piece of American history. It's something that we all should celebrate. It signifies the date in June 19th, 1865, when the Union Army finally got to Galveston, Texas, to let the remaining enslaved Black Americans know that they were free. And when that happened, it was a moving event because 2.5 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, there were still Black Americans that were enslaved because, you know, you couldn't just send an email and let everybody know. You couldn't just put it, you know, on FedEx and make sure everybody got the word. So it took some time, especially the furthest most point in the South, which was Texas, the Galveston, Texas, to be specific. And so for many years, on local levels, Black Americans have gathered to celebrate Juneteenth, as it's called, in many states and cities have acknowledged the holiday. President Trump last year in his Black Economic Empowerment Plan called for Juneteenth to be a federal holiday. And this year, it was signed into law and that it was made happen. And so it is now another federal holiday. And it's a good thing. It's something that is important to our country. It's something that we should celebrate. And it's something as Republicans, we do and have celebrated and will continue to celebrate because it's part of our heritage as a party. This party, the Republican Party, has always been the party of freedom, always been the party of opportunity, always been the party of emancipation, historically and to present day. And so it is something that we should embrace. It is something that we should enjoy learning more about if we're unaware of it. And use it to talk about the greatness of this country, that this is still the best place for anybody to be because of the fact we are the place where opportunity still happens. And even though we did have the scourge of slavery, our founding fathers had the ability to write it into our laws so that we could get out of it by the amendment process of the Constitution. And thanks to Republican leaders like President Lincoln and others that were in the Congress at the time, led to this nation becoming united around the issue of being a free country for all Americans, living up to our founding fathers who said in the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal.
Now I'm speaking with Paris Denard, and I love how you talk about learning our history, whether it is Juneteenth and the meaning of it or the Tulsa Race Massacre. There are a lot of important days, and I think when you learn history, you see how much progress we've made and what we can do in the future, and you understand just how far we've come. But there seems to be a bit of a conflation, Paris, and I don't know if you've noticed this, in the left with critical race theory, the argument that people like Joy Reid, and I'm going to play a cut here for you because I want you to react.
Sure.
She specifically calls out the GOP for, you know, not wanting to teach critical race theory, she conflates that with not teaching about slavery in schools. And just from hearing you speak about it, you know, everyone does learn about this. And, you know, you can always learn more. No one's arguing that. But this idea that, you know, the parents who are opposed to critical race theory are somehow opposed to their children learning about slavery is just completely false. I want to play this. She calls out the GOP. I know you represent the GOP. Let's play cut 14, please.
Well, Juneteenth will now be commemorated nationwide. There's a catch. In some red states, it could soon be illegal to teach what the holiday is all about. That's because Republican state legislatures in a dozen states are now aiming to dictate how historical and modern racism in America are taught. That includes the state of Texas, where Juneteenth was first celebrated. Governor Abbott signed a law this week intended to ban critical race theory from being taught in public schools, even though it's not being taught in any K-12 curriculums anywhere.
All right, Paris, how do you react to that cut?
I don't think Joy Reid is someone that is a respectable journalist, and so I think people should disregard what she said, especially for her past comments and bigoted things that she's done as a journalist that I consider to be a commentator, and she's void of actually understanding the positions of the Republican Party. She should turn her attention to what Democrats are doing and what Democrats are trying to do to radicalize, change this country and indoctrinate our youth, and it's a shame. But ultimately, she's wrong. She's wrong because critical race theory, while it may she thinks it's not being taught right now, they're trying to. There's a friend of mine down in Dallas, Texas, in high school, and her family had to help her push back against her school from preventing them to say the Pledge of Allegiance. They said it was discriminatory and racist and something that should not be said. So critical race theory is happening. And the thing that they would do with critical race theory is they would say, they would focus on all the negatives. They would try to focus on all of the things that are bad with being white in their eyes and not look at the promise and the things that are good that came out of emancipation. They want to radically change history and impose this racial theory to racialize everything and to indoctrinate children to making them think that there is an oppressor and an oppressed still in America, and that the founding of this country was founded upon evil and founded upon racism. And they want to change the way history is written and the way history is told to go after this more progressive liberal ideology that is divisive, that is un-American, and that actually sows discord, seeds of discord in the minds of America's population. And it's wrong. And Joy Reid is wrong.
Yeah, and Paris, I'm glad you brought that up, because what I keep hearing about, and you just mentioned this word, oppression, and they do want kids at a very young age to understand that you are either oppressed or you are the oppressor. And what a lot of parents have been pointing out is this is the opposite of what a lot of people fought for in the civil rights movement, which was for people to be judged on the content of their character and not to just be looked at as what race they are. But it does seem like for a lot of liberals, including Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, these people on CNN, they want racism to be everywhere.
It's true, because look, racism, sexism, ageism, all those things are taught. They're learned behaviors. When you're a child and you put children together, they're going to play in the sandbox. They don't care if you're Asian, if you're black, if you're Hispanic, if you're white. They just want somebody to play with. They want to go to the pool and have fun. It is only when ignorant people come into their lives and say, oh, you can't play with him because he's white, or you can't play with her because she has a gap tooth, or you can't, or her parents come from the South, so you know that they're going to hate you. We put this on children. We indoctrinate them, and that's what's wrong. We should be talking about what unites us as Americans. And when you see the liberal left trying to change what it means to be an American by saying illegal immigrants can just come here and reap all the benefits of American citizenship, they are fundamentally trying to change everything that we know about America and being American. And so it's no surprise that they want to do this. They want to divide us. This is about division. This is about things that are just not where we should be when it comes to unifying the country.
Paris Denard, I always love having you on. You do a fabulous job. Everyone should follow you on Twitter at Paris Denard. He gives his Paris perspective on everything from Kamala Harris to Juneteenth to the Biden administration. Paris, we so appreciate it. We hope to have you on again soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
The frenzied real estate market is causing bidding wars across certain segments. Real estate brokers are holding calls for highest and best offers because demand is so high. I'm actually going to be interviewing Justin Manning during the next segment because I have a lot of questions. I'm reading now about, you know, there's just no inventory and people feel like they're going to be renting forever. And I wanted to ask him about this. How do you know as a seller if you've realized all of the money for your property and if you've sold under the best terms? You wouldn't hire a refrigerator repairman to fix your valuable car. So when selling real estate, let the bidding war experts for over 45 years sell your property quickly, contingency-free, and for true market value. Recent real estate auctions for Howie Carr listeners have attracted as many as 30 qualified, cash-ready buyers battling for their properties. At the end of your auction, you will know that no money was left on the table, and you can't ask for a better feeling than that. Remember, when you sell your real estate in the usual way with a broker, you pay the commission. But in a J.J. Manning auction, the buyer pays. That saves you, the seller, thousands of dollars right there. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more on how to get your property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Call Charlie today at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com and get your property sold. We'll actually be talking to Justin Manning in the next segment, so if you have any questions for him, text them in to 63566. Start your text with the word Curly, C-U-R-L-E-Y. He is our real estate expert here at the Grace Curley Show. By the way, Taylor, not to call you out, but you gave us a little bit of fake news with the Bruce Springsteen. You kind of had it reversed.
I did. Yeah, I'm sorry. He's accepting any vaccine but the AstraZeneca. So
the AstraZeneca people who are listening are
sorry
devastated.
You got so excited that you were going to be granted entry to the Bruce Springsteen show, but no,
they thought they were VIPs, and really, they're not even allowed in. Wow.
No
guys,
backstage passes for you.
There might be some people out there now who are trying to get rid of their Bruce Springsteen tickets after that last segment. All right, we will be back on the other side with Justin Manning and all of your questions. 844-500-4242. Call in if you have a question for Justin. I'll take some calls with them. We'll be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato
You'll
chips.
Get nothing and like it.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We're at the 110 Grill in Woburn, and I'm so excited to be here. I just got my delicious citrus salad with a side of salmon, and wow, the food here is phenomenal. We got a packed house. People keep coming in. I encourage you to come. We're having the best time. Get a free book from Howie. He's actually in the building. Can we get a round of applause, please, for Howard Lawrence Carr? Thank you very much, everyone. All right, now I'm very excited about my next guest. He's a real estate expert. Justin Manning is joining us now. Justin, I have a lot of questions for you.
All right, Grace, fire away.
All right, my first one is this piece from Bloomberg. I have a feeling you're going to disagree with it. But the title is America Should Become a Nation of Renters. Rising real estate prices are stoking fears that home ownership, long considered a core component of the American dream, is slipping out of reach for people. Do you agree with that, Justin?
So I don't. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't make what we do irrelevant. It qualifies the fact of what I've always said is, if you are able to buy a home and it's a sound investment and you plan on staying there and you've got a good job and your partner has a good job and things are going to continue to be the same, then go for it. But don't get pushed into home ownership if you could have changes happen in your life. Like, I don't know, have a baby, lose a job, get cancer. There's so many things that can happen, variables. So you have to look at it from that standpoint. You can't just buy a home because other people have homes and that's what people tell you to do. You have to make that decision because it makes sense for you. And some people are not home buyers. Some people should be renters based upon what they earn and what their ability is, where they live. It's just a better decision financially.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you had an interesting email out recently. I'm speaking with Justin Manning from J.J. Manning Auctioneers, and you talk about how 82% of sellers are getting above listing right now. Is that cannot be true?
So this was an email. I mean, I'm a broker and an auctioneer. I'm licensed as both, but we strictly sell at auction for a reason, because we know it's better. I got an email from the National Association of Realtors yesterday as being a realtor. And the title of it, the big headline, 82% of sellers in this market are getting above list price. And I attribute that to two things. One, a super hot market. And two, brokers have bought in to the auction platform by underlisting their property to get multiple bids, to compete against one another, to drive the price to the true market value. So that quasi-auction is created by underlisting the property. So that's why that statistic is so high, but it's pretty impressive as well.
I also want to talk a little bit, and I'm not a real estate expert, Justin. I know you know this, but you mentioned to me something recently about kick-out clauses. Can you explain to people what that is and why it's a better choice to go with an auction?
So when there's a kick-out clause as part of an offer with a buyer, that allows the seller to essentially take a better offer, meaning with better terms or better money. They can, buyer number two comes in, and the seller can go to buyer one and say, hey, we've got a kickout clause, so you either remove your contingencies and come up to this price within 72 hours, or we're going with this other buyer. So what it does is it forces the hand of buyer one. But either way, Grace, if they go with buyer one or buyer two, at that point, now the deal's locked in and it's going to move forward and close. And I spoke with a friend recently that went through this exact process selling his home on the Cape, and he talked to two other people later on that would have paid more money than bidder one, than offer one or offer two. So that kickout clause really just contains you to two people. And that's why I keep saying, why contain it to one or two? Why shouldn't it be 10, 20, 30 people that determine what the highest number is?
Now, Justin, I want to ask you before we go, and this is Justin Manning from J.J. Manning Auctioneers. I do want to talk about a recent listener's home who you signed up in Westwood. But before I do, I have a question. So I've been talking to a lot of people about how everyone is so eager to buy a home, especially young people. You know, they're getting married, they're starting families, and it's really hard to get their offer accepted. So they're waiving things like home inspections, and they're going, you know, thousands of dollars above asking. Do you think people are going to regret that later down the line?
I think in a couple years, when the banks allow some of these forbearances that they still are kind of hanging on to with foreclosures, and those, you know, not really where we live here, Grace, but in other parts of the country, when those foreclosures then start to not flood the market, but they're going to start to almost balance things out. And I think that it's possible that somebody shoulda, coulda, woulda in a couple years. But honestly, if they want to be in a certain location and that's what they've chosen to want to be and do, then they should do it. But there may be a little bit of buyer remorse in a couple years, but if they're in there for the long term, then who cares?
All right, tell us about this listener's home in Westwood, Justin.
So this listener is a huge Grace, huge Howie fan, listens all the time. She actually first touched base with us 6 months ago, but she was so nervous about the process that she needed to see us go through it with multiple other Grace and Howie listeners and see the successes and see the results and follow what we do and kind of vet us and vet the process. And now she feels confident and has signed on, and we've got her home in Westwood. It's 365 Blue Hill Drive in Westwood, and it's heading to absolute auction on July 22nd, and she's going to do fantastic, and we've already had interest from pre-auction buyers that want to make a move on this sooner, so she'll do great.
I think people do hear auction, and they might get nervous just because they're unfamiliar with it, Justin, but just remind people, first of all, where they can find you if they do have questions, and second, why it is a good choice for people trying to sell their homes.
Great. So they can reach us on the website at jjmanning.com, or they can call my man Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111. And the main reason an auction is so relevant right now, Grace, especially in this market, is the market is dictating that no money is going to be left on the table, and the terms of an auction benefit the seller so greatly that it's just a no-brainer.
All right. Thank you so much to Justin Manning from JJ Manning. We very much appreciate it. Guys, when we get back, we're talking summer jobs. I'm opening up the lines, 844-500-4242. Call in with your best and your worst summer job experience. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We are at the 110 Grill in Woburn, and the place is rocking. I really appreciate everyone showing up, especially the people who came even before Howie Carr got here. Real ego boost for yours truly. By the way, Howie Carr is officially here. I know that because the donuts have been moved to the other side of the table. That was his first move. He got here, smelled them, and then moved them very far away. Interesting. We have to do the poll question here, but I want to set up a little bit of what I want to talk about, because this was a great idea by the mailroom manager. She sent me this article, and it says, teens have their pick of jobs thanks to a worker shortage. And I was actually thinking about this, because I did a lot of waitressing when I was younger, and you kind of had to be good. Like, you really had to, you know, work your way up. You had to start as a hostess for a while. But now I think you could really skip over that because they need workers. You could go in and kind of pave your own way pretty quickly. And so, according to CNN, teenage workers are in high demand this summer, especially at Main Street businesses, and that will come as a relief since working teens were hard hit by pandemic-related layoffs. I was talking to Marcy the other day, and she said she gets applications all the time from kids who want summer jobs. Now, my question for my audience, my listeners, is what was your best summer job? Or what could be even more interesting, what was your worst summer job? We've all had a job that we weren't crazy about. My best summer job was working at a very fancy restaurant in Martha's Vineyard. Made a lot of moolah and was very happy about it. And my younger brother at the time was working at a kids' camp. And I called him up one night and I said, wait till I tell you how much I made in tips. And he said, please do not tell me that, because my job right now is so miserable. I'm you know, wrangling these kids in. They're giving me a hard time. He was so miserable. And so, of course, I said to him, all right, I won't tell you, but this is how much I made. And then I told him, because I was just so excited about it. He's my brother. I had to rub it in. But I think whether you have great jobs in the summer or bad jobs, it's just good to be working. And I want to know what you guys did as kids, and like, would you suggest it? I think waiting tables is the best job for any teenager, because it really does teach you how much goes into it. It teaches you how to prioritize things, how to get things done, how to help.
Yeah, how to interact with people too. So many kids these days do not know how to interact with people face to face.
Exactly. And Taylor, it also teaches you in your future when you go out to a restaurant how to treat waiters or servers, because you understand that sometimes things do go wrong and sometimes the person you're talking to isn't the one responsible for something going wrong. So you give people a little bit more grace.
I'd recommend the movie Waiting for anybody who wants to know what goes on in the kitchens at some of these places.
Yeah, it is crazy. I remember one time I was at a restaurant and I was working there. And there's this expression where you say, I need a cheeseburger on the fly. And what's implied is you forgot to put it in, you forgot to enter it into the system. And we used to have this thing there, and they would fry an entire lobster in a wok. And it was this big fancy thing. It cost like $100 to get it. And then most people would say, I don't really like the looks of this, I'm going to send it back. But you'd put it in, and I totally forgot three of those orders. And so I went into the back kitchen and I said, I need three fried lobsters on the fly. And I remember the chef was a big guy, and he came out of that kitchen with like the bandana on his head, and he said to me, how the hell do you miss three meals? How do you forget to put in three meals? And I was just shaking there, like, I'm sorry. But it toughens you up. It teaches you, you know, how to make mistakes, how to bounce back. And I just think it's a good thing for everyone to learn how to do. 844-500-4242. And we will take your calls on that. But first, today's poll question is brought to you by the Eden Pure Bio Speed Clean Vacuum Cleaner. Get this high-quality vacuum cleaner for a fraction of the price of competitors with code word GRACECLEAN and save $20 plus free shipping at EdenPure.com. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Who is the most terrible CNN anchor? Anderson Cooper, Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, or Brian Stelter?
For me, it's definitely tight between Stelter and Cuomo, because I did have to watch Stelter the other night for something to transcribe, and he's insufferable. But I think with Cuomo, with his older brother, and you know, just his history of getting in fights with fat tire bikers, I'm going to say Chris Cuomo.
Cuomo has a decisive lead at 37%, followed closely by Don Lemon at 29% and Brian Stelter at 28%. Anderson Cooper only garnering 6% of the vote.
Wow, even in the polls, his ratings are low. Whether Anderson Cooper's on CNN or hosting Jeopardy, he never gets above 6%. That's pretty incredible. 844-500-4242. Now, Taylor, I'm glad we're talking about this because every time I mention an establishment, you say to me, oh, I used to work there. It's like Howie Carr when he says, I used to live there. Howie's lived everywhere. Taylor's worked everywhere.
I've worked at Domino's, Wendy's, let's see, Honeydew Donuts. I've worked for a lot of places. But I would say my best summer job was also my worst, and that would have been caddying at the local country club in New Bedford.
Ooh, a little caddy shack. Why was it the best and the worst?
It was the best because, I mean, you got to kind of hobnob with a lot of these, you know, movers and shakers in the community. It was, you know, it wasn't an exclusive club, but it was a country club. You know, you had to have some money to be there. So you're, you know, hobnobbing with doctors and local politicians and things like that. And you got to play for free on Mondays if you were a caddy. So, you know, before 10 o'clock in the morning, you want to hit the links. The course is free, which is a great boon to somebody who's not even eligible for membership because of their age. But it was also the worst because you would walk and carry somebody's bag for 4 hours and give them tips and whatnot on how to hit a shot and where the flag was and all of that. And you might get $10. It was gruesome some days. But I do remember one time I was caddying a ladies' four-ball tournament. And the lady I was caddying for hit a hole-in-one on the 17th. I got a $50 tip. It was really nice.
Oh, very good. I think my worst, my best, like I said, was waitressing, because that's where the money is. But my worst was probably just being a camp counselor. It's especially if you're at like a fancier camp and the kids are all just woke little brats. I can't think of another word to use. And everyone's yelling, I'm allergic to that. It didn't do it for me. I was like, ugh, I gotta get out of this. I gotta start making some real money. But yeah, this is the interesting part of the story. It says one reason is that teens are now benefiting from the difficult time many small businesses are having trying to adequately staff their operations as pandemic restrictions are lifted. Now listen to this part, Taylor. Adult job applicants have been hard to come by. Huh? Many are unable to return to work yet because of childcare or health concerns. Some may have opted to leave their industry or simply choose to work at a bigger chain that pays better than its small business competitors. And others may be waiting until the $300 a week federal supplement to unemployment benefits expires. This is from CNN. This feels like a little bit of hate speech coming from them. I can't believe they wrote that line.
I've told Howie this several times. If I were a teenager this summer, I would try getting 2, 3, even 4 jobs. This is the summer to make money. And I'm sure you can get your foot in the door somewhere where you actually want to have a career. Even if it's at a low-level position, I'm sure you can quickly work your way up because there are a lot of open positions.
I would have just shot for bartending because that was the one thing I could never crack into. They were like, she's an okay waitress. She'll probably be a terrible bartender. But I think right now if I could get into it, I mean, they need bodies. So maybe I'd have a shot at it. All right, Tom, you're next with Grace and the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, Grace.
What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I want to talk about my first summer job. I was 14, and I worked on a chicken farm. And it was a very big chicken farm. They had huge barn-like hen houses. And what they would do in the fall is they'd put sawdust down on the floor as an absorbent. And then in the summer, we would go out there with pitchforks and break it up and throw it into the truck that was down below. I made 35 cents an hour in 1968.
Wowzers. So was that your best or your worst? I'm sorry, I missed it, Tom. Was that
really
your best?
Really bad. It was hot. It was hot, and it smelled. And I didn't eat chicken for 5 years after that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And honestly, when people pick up chickens, that the whole thing, everybody here knows, I'm not a bird person, but they can get kind of, the little claws, they can get kind of vicious. Thanks for the call, Tom. I appreciate it. Bill, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello, good afternoon. I had one of the very best ones when I was very young. I was the lifeguard at the Holiday Inn, and what they didn't tell me was that it was kind of a businessman's hotel, so nobody ever swam in the pool. And I literally sat there all summer long reading paperback books at really good pay.
Yeah, I know. The lifeguards sometimes do have it made. Like, you know, especially if you're at a nice country club. The lifeguards on the beach, though, they do have to pay attention because that can get kind of scary. But I remember looking at the lifeguards when I was younger at the pool we used to go to, and I would say, I want to do that when I get older, because it was always the cool kids who were the lifeguards. 844-500-4242. Thank you for the call, Bill. We'll be back on the other side. I want to hear your best summer job, your worst summer job, and maybe a tip you have for all the young teenagers who are looking to start working and start making some of this money that's just sitting around because the adults don't want to go back to work. 844-500-4242. It's the Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Start the afternoon off right.
Now what? Now comes a girl. Here she is. This is just the best part of my day.
It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We are at the 110 Grill in Woburn having so much fun. I just had a delicious salad. Howie just chowed down on some food, and the place is rocking. I encourage everyone to head on down. You'll get a free book. John McCosh will be here soon taking professional photos for free. So if you want to get a photo, I encourage that as well. We're talking about best and worst summer jobs. Jobs you love, jobs you hated, jobs that taught you something, perhaps. Paul, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, how you doing? Enjoying your show. I tell you, you did good for putting up years with Howie to get your own show. So kudos.
Thank you.
I'm going to come out with my job, and then you figure out who's the best or the worst, because I have a best job, but I also have a worst job. One job I took in a bakery, and I figured, oh, you know, pies, cake, cookies, and I said, this sounds pretty good. So I got there, and he stuck me in the back room in a steam thing where you shove the pans in there and steam them and scrape them off, and, you know, and they gave me a promotion one time. They brought me out from the back, and they were getting a new oven put in. So I said, okay, good, I got out from the steam. So I had to move the oven away from the wall. There was about 12 of them. They pulled the oven away from the wall, which was nice and white and clean. And as the oven was coming away from the wall, it turned black with cockroaches.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, Paul, that does sound crazy. I appreciate the call. Yeah, it's interesting, too, because it says before the pandemic, Jeff Rogoff would typically only hire teens as delivery drivers for his sit-down pizza restaurant in Saza, located in a suburb south of Denver. Rogoff always figured it wasn't worth his time and money to train people to work in his restaurant's kitchen if he knew they would leave in a few months when school starts. Plus, he added, he has to abide by legal restrictions governing how long teens can work in a kitchen and the equipment they can use. But this summer, he had to change his tune. Job openings in the U.S. are soaring to 9.3 million. If a teenager came in and said, I can work for 3 months, I would hire them. It would be, yes, when can you start? Well, 3 months still isn't ideal. It would give me three more months than I have right now. Peggy, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Peggy.
Hi, Grace. Great show as usual. My summer job story goes back to when I was in high school, and I was sort of like an office person in a police station, an MDC police station. And it was supposed to be 9 to 5. And, you know, it was just me and another girl. And all the police officers were so nice. They said, take off at 1 o'clock. Take off at 1:30. They'd bring in lunch a couple of times a week. And it was like no supervision. It was fabulous.
So it was a little bit hacky, is what you're saying. It was a little bit like a hack job.
It really was. And I thought, this is what it's like to be in the working world. I'm in. Count me in. And little did I know, as the years went on, what a rude awakening it was to get a real job.
Yeah, I definitely feel you. Actually, speaking of that, so Will, my fiance, he's an electrician, but he used to work in a toll booth. And it's funny because when I go out to restaurants, I always think of when I was a server. And so you're always nicer if you were a server to servers. But when he goes through a toll booth, he is like, he's a whole different guy. He starts beaming from ear to ear. Hi, how you doing? Thank you. Oh, yeah. And he always says to me, you got to be nice to the toll workers. I've been there. I'm like, what do you think I do, spit on the money? I'm not mean to them. I just drive through and keep going. Scott, you're next with Grace. Thanks for the call, Peggy. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi. Thanks, Scott. Great show. So I'm going to date myself, but many years ago, I worked at Wellington Circle at a donut shop called, when I was 16, called Mr. Donut. And I would go in there after school to work from 4 to 8. So it was scrubbing floors, you know, hard work, you know. And one of my jobs was to make sure I pumped in jelly to the jelly donuts.
Ooh.
And the guy was really cute. He wanted me to measure the jelly that went into it, and he was like, he was always trying to cut the jelly, right? So when he wasn't there, I would take the squirter thing and I would blow those things up like softballs, you know.
So he wanted to do, because I've heard of this before too with other industries where, and I'm not going to name the location, but let's say you get a soft serve ice cream and they tell you to go around and don't fill up the center with the ice cream so you use less product. He was trying to do that with the jelly donuts.
That's what he's trying to do, but I resented that, and I said, look, I'm going to pump these things up like no tomorrow. So when somebody bites down, it's going to glue out there. So they'll get their fill of jelly and blueberries.
Yeah, so you were filling those jelly donuts. They were Spite donuts. You were filling them full of jelly and Spite. I do the same thing when Howie's not around. I stick my cans. I throw them away in the trash can. And when he walks by and sees them, it breaks his heart. He gets so sad. He's like, why do you keep doing this over and over again? I told you, I want to bring these in. And I'm like, yeah, but it makes me happy to just kind of toss them in there and see your reaction. Thanks for the call, Scott. I understand that. My mom used to work at a bakery when she was younger, and she said the guy who owned the bakery, his daughter would come in and kind of be like, my dad's the boss and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And my mom would get so mad that when she'd leave, she'd start eating the product, you know, just to be like, eh. Yeah, exactly. She'd start, you know, with the icing and all that. All right, guys. So when we get back, we got a lot of this sound to get through. I want to talk a little bit about Andrew Yang, because he seemed to be getting very politically correct for a while. I don't know, Taylor, have you noticed that? I thought he was really shrinking away from some of this. But based off these cuts we have from him talking about the mentally ill in New York City, I think he might make a little bit of a comeback with New Yorkers.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's got the dog story to come back from, right? So this is in the opposite direction.
Yeah, that was so bizarre. It was like National Dog Day, and he tweeted out about a dog that he had sent to the farm or something. And maybe you sit this National Dog Day out, Andrew Yang. We'll be back, guys. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.